Tender Flame, Tales of Romance. I'm Mardell, reading The Blue Castle by L. M. Montgomery. Chapter 19. Of course, the Sterlings had not left the poor maniac alone all this time, or refrained from heroic efforts to rescue her perishing soul and reputation. Uncle James, whose lawyer had helped him as little as his doctor, came one day and, finding Valancy alone in the kitchen, as he supposed, gave her a terrible talking to, told her she was breaking her mother's heart and disgracing her family. "But why?" said Valancy, not ceasing to scour her porridge pot decently. "I'm doing honest work, for honest pay. What is there in that that is disgraceful?"
"Don't quibble, Valancy," said Uncle James solemnly. "This is no fit place for you to be, and you know it. Why, I'm told that jailbird Snaith is hanging around here every evening."
"Not every evening," said Valancy reflectively. "No, not quite every evening."
"It's insufferable," said Uncle James violently. "Valancy, you must come home. We won't judge you harshly. I assure you, we won't. We will overlook all this."
"Thank you," said Valancy.
"Have you no sense of shame?" demanded Uncle James.
"Oh, yes, but the things I am ashamed of are not the things you are ashamed of." Valancy proceeded to rinse her dishcloth meticulously. Still was Uncle James patient. He gripped the sides of his chair and ground his teeth.
"We know your mind isn't just right. We'll make allowances, but you must come home. You shall not stay here with that drunken, blasphemous old scoundrel." "Were you by any chance referring to me, Mr. Sterling?" demanded Roaring Abel, suddenly appearing in the doorway of the back veranda, where he had been smoking a peaceful pipe and listening to old Jim Sterling's tirade with huge enjoyment. His red beard fairly bristled with indignation, and his huge eyebrows quivered. But cowardice was not among James Sterling's shortcomings.
"I was, and furthermore, I want to tell you that you have acted an iniquitous part in luring this weak and unfortunate girl away from her home and friends, and I will have you punished yet for it."
James Sterling got no further. Roaring Abel crossed the kitchen at a bound, caught him by his collar and his trousers, and hurled him through the doorway and over the garden paling, with as little apparent effort as he might have employed in whisking a troublesome kitten out of the way.
"The next time you come back here," he bellowed, "I'll throw you through the window, and all the better if the window is shut. Coming here thinking yourself God to put the world to rights."
Valancy candidly and unashamedly owned to herself that she had seen few more satisfying sights than Uncle James' coattails flying out into the asparagus bed. She had once been afraid of this man's judgment. Now she saw clearly that he was nothing but a rather stupid little village tin god. Roaring Abel turned with his great broad laugh.
"He'll think of that for years. When he wakes up in the night, the Almighty made a mistake, making so many Sterlings, but since they are made, we've got to reckon with them. Too many to kill out, but if they come here bothering you, I'll shoo 'em off before a cat could lick its ear."
The next time they sent Dr. Stalling, surely Roaring Abel would not throw him into asparagus beds. Dr. Stalling was not so sure of this and had no great liking for the task. He did not believe Valancy Sterling was out of her mind. She'd always been queer. She was only just a little queerer than usual now, and Dr. Stalling had his own reasons for disliking Roaring Abel. When Dr. Stalling had first come to Deerwood, he had had a liking for long hikes around Mistewis and Muskoka. On one of these occasions, he had got lost, and after much wandering had fallen in with Roaring Abel with his gun over his shoulder.
Dr. Stalling had contrived to ask his question in about the most idiotic manner possible. He said, "Can you tell me where I'm going?"
"How the devil should I know where you're going, Gosling?" retorted Abel contemptuously.
Dr. Stalling was so enraged that he could not speak for a moment or two, and in that moment or two Abel had disappeared into the woods. Dr. Stalling had eventually found his way home, but he had never hankered to encounter Abel Gay again. Nevertheless, he came now to do his duty. Valency greeted him with a sinking heart. She had to own to herself that she was terribly afraid of Dr. Stalling still. She had a miserable conviction that if he shook his long bony finger at her and told her to go home, she dared not disobey.
"Mr. Gay," said Dr. Stalling politely and condescendingly, "may I see Miss Sterling alone for a few minutes?"
Groering Abel was a little drunk, just drunk enough to be excessively polite and very cunning. He had been on the point of going away when Dr. Stalling arrived, but now he sat down in a corner of the parlor and folded his arms.
"No, no, mister," he said solemnly, "that wouldn't do. Wouldn't do at all. I've got the reputation of my household to keep up. I've got to chaperone this young lady. Can't have any sparking going on here behind my back."
Outraged, Dr. Stalling looked so terrible that Valency wondered how Abel could endure his aspect, but Abel was not worried at all.
"Do you know anything about it, anyway?" he asked genially.
"About what?"
"Sparking,"
said Abel coolly. Poor Dr. Stalling, who had never married because he believed in a celibate clergy, would not notice this ribald remark. He turned his back on Abel and addressed himself to Valency.
"Miss Sterling, I am here in response to your mother's wishes. She begged me to come. I am charged with some messages from her. Will you," he wagged his finger, "will you hear them?"
"Yes," said Valency faintly, eyeing the forefinger. It had a hypnotic effect on her.
"The first is this. If you will leave this
house," interjected Roaring Abel, "H-O-U-S-E. Troubled with an impediment in your speech, ain't you, mister?
This place, and return to your home, Mr. James Sterling will himself pay for a good nurse to come here and wait on Miss Gay."
Back of her terror, Valency smiled in secret. Uncle James must indeed regard the matter as desperate when he would loosen his purse strings like that. At any rate, her clan no longer despised her or ignored her. She had become important to them.
"That's my business, mister," said Abel. "Miss Sterling can go if she pleases, or stay if she pleases. I made a fair bargain with her, and she's free to conclude it when she likes. She gives me meals that stick to my ribs. She don't forget to put salt in the porridge. She never slams doors. And when she has nothing to say, she don't talk."
"That's uncanny in a woman, you know, mister.
I'm satisfied. If she isn't, she's free to go. But no woman comes here in Jim Sterling's pay. If anyone does..."
Abel's voice was uncannily bland and polite.
"I'll splatter the road with her brains. Tell him that with A. Gay's compliments."
"Dr. Stalling, a nurse is not what Sissy needs," said Valency earnestly. "She isn't so ill as that yet. What she wants is companionship, somebody she knows and likes, just to live with her. You can understand that, I'm sure."
"I understand that your motive is quite, commendable."
Dr. Stalling felt that he was very broad-minded indeed, especially as in his secret soul he did not believe Valency's motive was commendable. He hadn't the least idea what she was up to, but he was sure her motive was not commendable. When he could not understand a thing, he straightway condemned it, simplicity itself.
But your first duty is to your mother. She needs you. She implores you to come home. She will forgive everything if you will only come home.
That's a pretty little thought, remarked Abel meditatively as he ground some tobacco up in his hand.
Dr. Stalling ignored him.
She entreats, but I, Miss Sterling...
Dr. Stalling remembered that he was an ambassador of Jehovah.
I command, as your pastor and spiritual guide, I command you to come home with me this very day. Get your hat and coat and come now.
Dr. Stalling shook his finger at Valency. Before that pitiless finger, she drooped and wilted visibly.
She's giving in, thought Roaring Abel. She'll go with him.
Beats all the power these preacher fellows have over women. Valency was on the point of obeying Dr. Stalling. She must go home with him and give up. She would lapse back to Doss Sterling again, and for her few remaining days or weeks be the cowed, futile creature she had always been. It was her fate, typified by that relentless, uplifted forefinger. She could no more escape from it than Roaring Abel from his predestination. She eyed it as the fascinated bird eyes the snake. Another moment. Fear is the original sin, suddenly said a still small voice away back, back, back of Valency's consciousness. Almost all the evil in the world has its origin in the fact that someone is afraid of something. Valency stood up. She was still in the clutches of fear, but her soul was her own again. She would not be false to that inner voice. Dr. Stalling, she said slowly, I do not at present owe any duty to my mother. She is quite well. She has all the assistance and companionship she requires. She does not need me at all. I am needed here. I am going to stay here.
There's spunk for you, said Roaring Abel admiringly.
Dr. Stalling dropped his forefinger. One could not keep on shaking a finger forever.
Miss Sterling, is there nothing that can influence you? Do you remember your childhood days?
Perfectly, and hate them.
Do you realize what people will say, what they are saying?
I can imagine it, said Valency with a shrug of her shoulders. She was suddenly free of fear again.
I haven't listened to the gossip of Deerwood tea parties and sewing circles 20 years for nothing. But, Dr. Stalling, it doesn't matter in the least to me what they say. Not in the least.
Dr. Stalling went away then. A girl who cared nothing for public opinion? Over whom sacred family ties had no restraining influences, who hated her childhood memories. Then Cousin Georgiana came on her own initiative, for nobody would have thought it worthwhile to send her. She found Valency alone weeding the little vegetable garden she had planted, and she made all the platitudinous pleas she could think of. Valency heard her patiently. Cousin Georgiana wasn't such a bad old soul. Then she said,
And now that you've got all that out of your system, Cousin Georgiana, can you tell me how to make cream codfish so that it will not be as thick as porridge and as salt as the Dead Sea?
We'll just have to wait, said Uncle Benjamin. After all, Sissy Gay can't live long. Dr. Marsh tells me she may drop off any day.
Mrs. Frederick wept.
It would really have been so much easier to bear if Valency had died.
She could have worn mourning then. Please join me next time for another romantic chapter of The Blue Castle here on Love's Tender Flame. Until then, love deeply and live beautifully.